Paper 27, section 3, which is old single column, page 300. All right, well, let's see here. So I think the main thing that we need to remind ourselves of from last time is that sort of little introduction that they made in passing in that last paragraph in the previous section. You remember how they said you must also fraternize with upwards of 3,000 different orders of paradise citizens, the various groups of the transcendentalers, and with numerous other types of paradise inhabitants, permanent and transient, etc. Okay. So there's all of these beings, you know, even more than you had to deal with in Havona, that are coming into play. And on top of that, like we were talking about last time, you're also, you know, when they say you must also fraternize, that that required fraternization is now required at a higher level than it was required in Havona. Even if you may have met that being in Havona, now the challenge, if you're going to relate to them in the context of paradise, the challenge is even greater. Fundamentally, again, like we were saying last time, you know, the higher you go, the more the near absolute all the way to absolute potentials of your personality are liberated, you know, to engage whatever, engage your nature, engage others. So that's the key of these next two groups of primary supernafim, the interpreters of ethics and the directors of conduct, before you can get to the significant, I suppose what you say, maybe more kind of directly educational as we tend to think of it, anyway, aspects with the subsequent supernafim, you have to get up to speed to be able to, to function in a full fashion there on the aisle. So that's what we're going to be looking at here. So let's get into section 3 there.
3, interpreters of ethics. The higher you ascend in the scale of life, the more attention must be paid to universe ethics. Ethical awareness is simply the recognition by any individual of the rights inherent in the existence of any and all other individuals. But spiritual ethics far transcends the mortal and even the Marantia concept of personal and group relations.
Okay, so just that little intro paragraph, you can kind of see how they're alluding to what I was pointing out, that the higher you ascend the scale of life, the more attention has to be paid to universe ethics. And you can say, well, why? I'm going higher and higher. Aren't I becoming more and more attuned along with everyone else to the unity in the universe? Aren't we all part of that unity and on the same page, therefore? I mean, why, should this be the case? Why do I have to worry about this, the recognition by any individual of the rights inherent in the existence of, any other? It's because the thing that we don't appreciate right now, we think of our individuality as sort of a completed issue, but it's barely begun. And so the higher you ascend, not only are you engaging higher and higher levels of unity, everyone who is ascending with you, or is there to where you ascend to, but you're also achieving greater and greater measures of individuality, like I was saying. And that's fundamentally because you're able to bring more and more of the personality into identification with yourself. So that self, just in and of itself, may have more unity in its nature, but you're now imposing more and more absolute individuality from your personality upon it. That individuality that comes from the personality will always be greater than any unity that you achieve. Now, if you want to think of it in kind of simple terms, your personality came from the first source and center, from God the Father, I should say. And that basic, material thingness individuality compared to spiritual unity, that's from the paradise and the second sources and center. So that's subsequent, in nature to that personality. So the personality can trump it, any relationship you can get to unity just directly from the second source and center. So you're talking about, obviously about an individuality that is going beyond, in some ways, what you initially think of when you think about the matter, mind, spirit here in the threefold actuality. When you think about individuality, associativity, unity, you're thinking more in immediate terms, like I was saying, of the absolute of matter, the Isle of Paradise, in contrast to the absolute spirit, the eternal Son. But transcendent of that, down here in the fourth block, you have personality. You have so that's one way you can think about when we said you're climbing up through the local universe and then through the super universe, and you're getting more and more relationship to unity. And we also pointed out you do that each in each of those two phases by establishing a new higher individuality. But now once you get to the central universe and all the way into the aisle, like I said, you flip it, you reciprocate the picture. And so one way to think about how you can have this higher picture where you go from unity being your starting point up through some higher associativity to some higher individuality is that personality. What's going on, see, once you finally have the fullness of spirit as your foundation, then that spirit pattern, that personality, can identify in a way it never could before. So that's what reinitiates, the Father, the initiator, that's what sort of reinitiates this new potential to go up, is you have this ability to engage it with personality, that threefold actuality. You have ability to engage it with personality like you never did before. And you can see why then, maybe it's a little easier to understand why this thing gets reciprocated. Because see, this thing that's higher really than that, the personality that's really higher than that twofold individuality unity is coming into play. We even mentioned, you think about it, it's like, well, okay, the absolute of matter, the absolute spirit, I'm going above absolute. Well, remember we were talking about having this relationship to the absolute existential level. And yet, and then that's what's immediately in play here with these interpreters of ethics and the directors of conduct. I have to somehow bridge, the first measure of full absolute personality differential between the person I'm trying to have a relationship with. I have to go super absolute. I'm going to have to use the co-infinite upholder mother to, in full fashion now to go to go up and over that divide, that absolute divide. See, so you can see we are in that mode where you can imagine bringing into play things that surprisingly are going above the absolute spirit and the absolute of matter. You know, we're beginning to go beyond anything that we can even remotely imagine right now in terms of a challenge to grow, supply the favorable conditions that I can be grown and also to have a relationship with someone else. So that's why, put that all together, why it's going to take these very high angels and all this concerted effort, just simply because, it's a great challenge that's in play. Okay.
So I guess in a sense we're going from a spirit conquest in the local and super level and to a flipping to a personal conquest in the central.
Yeah, it's like when they talk about the three cosmic intuitions, and they point out that there's, spirit of truth aside for the moment, that just with the Holy Spirit, you really have four things in play, and it has to do with the fact that there's four blocks on this chart here that you have You have that, the very overt threefold actuality with the three cosmic intuitions, but there's this subtle encompassment of the whole thing with personality that is, up until we're getting here to the central universe, has tended to be kind of a lot of potential and not a lot of actual.
Yeah.
Now you're really seeing that, it turned, and you're now... you're actually starting with that encompassment and then penetrating in to a higher threefold rather than kind of work the threefold into a harmony, you've really gotten yourself into a more top-down engagement of things, whereas you were struggling bottom-up, and that's why you were ascending so much. But you can see the central universe is, in order to complete the ascent, you have to actually reciprocate things and really get fundamentally in a top-down mode. Because the beings that you're trying to establish a relationship to, those existential deities that are going to mark the culmination of your ascent, they are nothing but top down, especially the Father. He has no way to be bottom up. He's completely transcendent. He's completely top down, in, outside in. This kind of provides a way of appreciating a little bit better why this, that we've been seeing for so long, this reciprocal thing is in play here. All right, let's get a little more of the details.
Ethics has been duly taught and adequately learned by the pilgrims of time in their long ascent to the glories of paradise. As this inward ascending career has unfolded from the nativity worlds of space, the ascenders have continued to add group after group to their ever-widening circle of universe associates. Every new group of colleagues met with adds one more level of ethics to be recognized and complied with, until, by the time the mortals of ascent reach paradise, they really need someone to provide helpful and friendly counsel regarding ethical interpretations. They do not need to be taught ethics, but they do need to have what they have so laboriously learned properly interpreted to them as they are brought face to face with the extraordinary task of contacting with so much that is new.
Okay, so on the one hand, in italicizing the interpreted is, they're going, no, that's how why we named them the interpreters of ethics. But think about that, oft-repeated passage. Discover, recognize, interpret, and choose. So I should remind you what's going on here. You know, ethics has been duly taught and adequately learned by the pilgrims of time, okay, in this long ascent. You've discovered and you've recognized, but even in the wake of perfect recognition, there's still an endless eternity of process of interpreting what you've recognized into new circumstances. I mean, I can make a logical recognition that is, you know, since it's just a one-time event, where I take a hold of that, and I've got that now. But then I can go on just ad nauseum, you know, forever and ever, interpreting that what I've recognized anew to a new set of circumstances. So that deductive interpretation step and the choice that's going to, you know, follow it. You know, here I'm, I have to properly, you know, inter. Okay, I've got to cross this divide between myself and the individual I'm trying to establish a real relationship with. So I've got to figure out how what I've taken a hold of, what I've recognized, what I've grasped, how I can get that across that divide, and I've got a person to help me with that, you know, bridging that gap, figure out how to interpret what I already have to match up with that external fact. And then we're both, you know, the other one's, the interpreter is helping the other direction too. And once the linkage is established, we can choose to have a real relationship. So, it's just another high, you know, manifestation that discover, recognize, interpret, and choose.
Why is this necessary if the adjuster is such an integral part of this at that point?
Again, I mean, the adjuster didn't bring anything from infinity that can help you with this. Non-personal. If anything, the adjuster just has the ability to make this more difficult, not easier, because it supplies a self nature that has the potential to relate to really high selves, but it's all up to my will to really make it happen. You know, so maybe another way to say it, the adjuster gives you greater actuality, the potential actuality of relationship, but the reality of the relationship, you can't help me with. You know, even though, you know, it's been a long time with me and I'm very much, you know, highly infused with this, you know, everything that I can imagine has already been brought together between that divide between myself and the adjuster, those two selves, you know, are really one self at this point at a very high level. You know.
Well, if that's true in paradise, yeah. That must be true in some way here. Mm-hmm. We have to make a personal, when we make a personal choice, mm-hmm. It's not just. The adjuster can't make that choice for us. We need to.
Yeah, the adjuster has no ability to choose. Yeah, yeah, and you know it's, and like I was just saying, I mean, that even that sort of way of thinking about it, you know, there's me, and then there's the adjuster. Can the adjuster help me? I mean, like we were just pointing out, I mean, that difference between me and the two selves has come together to this point. Right. You just don't. You know, so it's just you, this very high self, and your will.
What stage are we talking about here? We're not fused.
Sure, of course we are.
Okay.
You know, you fused way back. You know, you fused.
All right, because you keep on talking about this, just like it's separate. And I thought when we're fused, we're one.
No, you're fused. You're not one. You know, it's that initial point of fusion is just that. You liquefy the two surfaces and you stick them together. What I was describing here a minute ago was you've infused a long ways now. I mean, in many ways, all of the finite infusing is done. There's all that transfinite stuff that is still an other. You haven't gotten intimate with it yet, and you won't until the grand universe is settled in light and life and all that. But so you can still talk about a bit of a transcendent otherness to the adjuster's self because of that. But all of the transcendent otherness that we think of right now, or even while we're in the mansion worlds and we fuse, that is long, long past by the time we're on paradise. We have to be, to a high degree infused with the adjuster before we can leave the local universe. That's the whole point, you have to have your whole self inside of that spirit fragment so that you don't need the Marantia scaffolding underneath it anymore, because you're about to take that Marantia scaffolding away. So, you are, in a basic sense that we could possibly understand right now, infused before you leave the local universe.
So
we're on paradise. Remember, the primary supernafim are on paradise.
We're still not at one with our adjuster.
Well, you'll never be totally at one. It'll take forever. Be totally at one with your adjuster because it came from infinity. It came from the infinite level. It's going to take endless cycles of eternity for you to get you up there. But we're on the Isle of Paradise. We are very, very intimate with our adjuster. But like Gene was, just pointing out, or my response to what Gene was saying there, fundamentally, that doesn't help you here. The adjuster, that adjusterness that's now part of you, doesn't bring will with it. The will is still as it's always been in that personality that's identified onto that self. It doesn't matter how fancy that self is now because there's been all of this adjuster self infused with it. It's still, the personality is still above that. And it has, the greater the self that it's identified with, the greater task it has at hand. That's why they say the higher you ascend, the more difficult this becomes. I mean, it's just now that personality has to somehow bring this very complex high fact into relationship with an equally high and complex fact. Yeah. And that, even when you're, engaging the fourth outer space level, forever from now, that still will be true. And you can know that it would have to still be true clear then, because it's even true when you're on the Isle of Paradise, which is like saying it's true at the center of the cosmos infinite. So it's certainly going to be true in the fourth outer space level. It's just true, forever true, that the personality is above the self, and is working on lifting the self up and extending the self out to engage others. And, back when they say you must also fraternize, having to come into relationship with these interpreters of ethics and all this complicated stuff that they can't really explain that they're gonna do with us, again, why? Why must you fraternize, and why must you go through this difficult process? Because the only reason for existing is to create true relationship. That's the one thing that isn't in the I Am. That primal concept that you start with. It's infinite in everything, but it's singular. The only reason anything is happening is to somehow have a real connection to a real other and have a real super additive consequence. Okay, let's see here. What else do we have going on there before we should go on? Let's see. I think that's basically it. So let's go to that third paragraph there.
The interpreters of ethics are of inestimable assistance to the paradise arrivals in helping them to adjust to numerous groups of majestic beings during that eventful period extending from the attainment of residential status to formal introduction into the core of mortal finaliters.
Induction,
thank you. Into the mortal core of mortal finaliters. Many of the numerous types of paradise citizens the ascendant pilgrims have already met on the seven circuits of Havona. The glorified mortals have also enjoyed intimate contact with the creature trinitized sons of the conjoint core in the inner Havona circuit, where these beings are receiving much of their education. And on the other circuits, the ascending pilgrims have met numerous unrevealed residents of the Paradise Havona system, who are there pursuing group training in preparation for the unrevealed assignments of the future.
Okay, you can see they're just, again, stressing, the complexity of all this, and even in the midst of everything that you got in Havona, like I said, you've taken it up to a much higher notch now. And let's just, at this point, bring in that, the way they worded that definition of ethical awareness there in the first paragraph. Ethical awareness is simply the recognition by any individual of the rights inherent in the existence. Now, why they say it that way? It's like, haven't we gone a long ways past, what we initially think of when we say, those are my rights, my rights under the Constitution or something like that, or the Bill of Rights, or the key there is, you think about the connection between rights and righteousness. To be right with the cosmos, to have the opportunity to exercise true liberty. Okay, the rights they're speaking of are the rights that you have as a righteous personality. I mean, an iniquitous personality has no rights, okay? But a righteous personality has the right to free will. And we've now gotten up to the level where you can fully engage that absolute dimension of your personality in that sense of having complete, literally absolute liberty. You have the right on the Isle of Paradise to manifest absolute liberty of your absolute unique individuality. Well, let's think about what that must imply. I mean, absolute liberty? Well, how do I not trounce on everyone then? The only way that you can have such a right, such a liberty, is if there's absolute law that liberty is in. That liberty in law idea that we have already recognized here on this benighted sphere, we've now taken that all the way up to the Isle of Paradise. And you now finally have absolute law that you are in. And for the first time, you're absolutely free. true liberty, you know, is in equal measure with law, because love and law are the same thing in the first source and center. It can't be any other way. That's where this personality came from. It's only within the absolute law that is the absolute Father that other fact that came from the Father, your personality, can have absolute liberty to finally be free, to finally really be able to feel what free will feels like. Think about how much coordination there has to be to make that happen. You aren't born, and you didn't even acquire going through Havona this ability to take what you are and precisely link it into absolute law. You're going to need someone to really help you with that. That's some very precise work to link those two together. They still have to be linked, even though you're standing right next to this fact that's love and law at the same time, at the center of the aisle. You're not that. You still have to put the two together, and you need lots of interpreters. So you need someone to go in between. You know, think of it simply that way. The love that is you and the law that is all around you. You know, and that being that you're trying to have a real relationship is in that law. You have to find that being through that absolute law. So you need someone to help you navigate that. But you will be so delighted when you have that interpreter help you do that, bring you into relationship to absolute law, because now for the first time you'll be free. You'll just suddenly feel this liberty of fluidity within your being that you never felt before. And anything less than that, from that point till eternity, will feel like claustrophobia. You'll love to come back to the aisle where that weight will be lifted off again, and you can be absolutely free again. You can build up the strength, and you can go back out. You'll begin to understand what the adjuster felt like when it left that domain and was imprisoned in your mind. You'll never have that stark experience of going from the kind of liberty that you'll feel when you're on the aisle to being crammed inside of that little pea brain of some mortal, like an adjuster feels. But you'll have a sense of it, you know, when you go out and you have to close yourself back in, because you can't let that loose outside of the aisle. And boy, will you be longing for the endless cycles of eternity when there's the infinite all are, and what's on the aisle now is everywhere, to the farthest reaches of infinity. The whole cosmos infinite will be such a liberated space. All right, so that's what's really at play here. You're coming face to face with something that's very difficult for humans right now to appreciate. That the liberty they crave is to be had only within law. And that so-called God of liberty, who said, no, that's not true. True liberty is to be found outside of law. You'll now know how absolutely false he was when you're on the aisle. And hopefully, if you see reflecting like this, you can know now just how absolutely false he is. He's wrong. I mean, even humans sing that he was wrong. Our liberty and law. We know he's wrong. Okay? You must be in cooperative subordination to the law in order to be free. All right. Okay, so let's get that last little bit there then.
All these celestial companionships are invariably mutual. As ascending mortals, you not only derive benefit from these successive universe companions and such numerous orders of increasingly divine associates, but you also impart to each of these fraternal beings something from your own personality and experience, which forever makes every one of them different and better for having been associated with an ascending mortal from the evolutionary worlds of time and space.
Okay, now that, the super additive consequence thing he's having there, think about, okay, we've talked about the our side some before. You know, this, it's very, you know, direct to understand, you know, what you gain. We can put simple words to what we gain. The only way to become a perfected being, starting out as a perfecting being, is to come into, you know, to take that perfecting being and put him into relationship with a perfect being. The super additive consequence of the relationship between a perfecting being and a perfect being is a perfected being. So, you know, that's fun. You must also fraternize. That's another way to think about it. I mean, if you want to be perfected, you can only get there through this super additive consequence. So as a perfecting being, you must come into full real relationship with a perfect being, because only then within you is there this super additive consequence of that you become perfected. But, you know, what about the other side? What does that perfect being get? What's the super additive consequence within him of the relationship between a perfect being and a perfecting being? Well, that's some measure of completeness, greater completeness, you know, that they don't possess innately. See? So you can think about, you know, from our perspective now, we're just, you know, we have a hard time even imagining, you know, what it is to get to that end point of the ascension and be perfect, let alone what happens in the second half of my career in the universe of universes, where I'm penetrating the whole to completion. But, you know, you can see how you could get a jump start kicking out if you think about, see, what that being is acquiring some completion, in a sense, kind of helping to pave the way for where you're about to go by having a relationship with you. So, you know, it's this symbiotic relationship that as you go out as a finaliter and try to add to that perfection with completion, you've kind of gotten the process started indirectly with all these people that you've come into relationship with. You know, they end up kind of being the first step out in that completion, and you can kind of follow them in that first step. And then it probably goes back and forth, trading super additive consequence, you know, and that's how we get to the grand universe settled in line life, is this back and forth of you know, the relationship between a perfect and a perfected being, then, you know, leading to one flavor of completion in one, and that, you know, leads to another completion in the other, and it says, you know, back and forth, and finally it gets the whole. Okay. So you're going to have that system phenomenon of all the beings trying to get to completion. Okay, so that's the interpreters of ethics. So, you know, just notice how we ended up with, it's all about thinking about some interplay. So that's, you know, again, there's a lot more to them calling in the interpreters than just the immediacy of trying to, you know, talk to Bob on paradise. Yeah, you know, they're starting to set up this more dynamic interplay in a real sense. The powers getting to the grand universe settled in light and life. All right. Now, what's the difference of this group? Let's see what we got here.
Section 4, Directors of Conduct. Having already been fully instructed in the ethics of paradise relationships, neither meaningless formalities nor the dictations of artificial castes, but rather the inherent proprieties, the ascendant mortals find it helpful to receive the counsel of the superaphic directors of conduct, who instruct the new members of Paradise Society in the usages of the perfect conduct of the high beings who sojourn on the central Isle of Light and Life.
Okay, so just right in that first paragraph, they're trying to give you the sense, along with their name, directors of conduct, of what the contrast is here. Okay, so you notice they're wanting you to think about the ethics along with, you know, the interpreters of ethics along with these directors of conduct. They bring them together in this first paragraph. So think about a nice, simple twofold that we already are working on appreciating here in the duality of the local universe. You know, directors, place, direction. Okay, that's fundamentally what's happening. These two are working together. So the interpreters of ethics are helping you to get integrated into the place that is paradise. Get you all linked in, bridge all these gaps. So you have this unified place-ness of the beings, and then the directors of conduct are going to work on directing that system somewhere. So you establish place and you give it direction. Okay, and you know, see how that they use that expression, usages of the perfect conduct. Okay, I mean, so we're all integrated together by the interpreters of ethics. So what use is that? And they say, well, let me show you. What we can do with that now, let's put that to use. This system that we've established on this really high level, you know, we've linked it together through the individuality of the whole. We've created this very high system. And now we can do something that you never imagined you can do with such a such a high system. So that's fundamentally what's going on. And then notice, they're such masters at using the words, how they... say it's neither meaningless formalities nor the dictation of artificial caste, but rather the inherent proprieties. To use the noun propriety, same root as property, you know, or proper too, for that matter. Okay? It's an inherent propriety. It's because, like we were saying, there's an inherent property, an inherent nature. In the beings that just is. And its differential is made fully manifest by this fully liberated identification of the personality and functioning of the personality. So they're just, in a sense, they're reminding you what I've stressed extensively and getting in through the previous section. It's just the innate fact of the differential, not only between fully manifesting selves that are different, but personalities that are absolutely different. That's why they picked that term, because it stresses that, you know, inherent proprieties. All right, so that's, obviously they're not going to be able to tell us much about the usages, because we can't even begin to imagine this. Okay, so that's why I'm really stressing. I mean, that's all you can really kind of take away, is that you can appreciate that there's, once you establish a new placeness, then there's a new directionness that's possible.
Harmony is the keynote of the central universe, and detectable order prevails on paradise. Proper conduct is essential to progress by way of knowledge, through philosophy to the spiritual heights of spontaneous worship. There is a divine technique in the approach to divinity, and the acquirement of this technique must await the pilgrim's arrival on paradise. The spirit of it has been imparted on the circles of Havona, but the final touches of the training of the pilgrims of time can be applied only after they actually attain the Isle of Light.
Okay, that's again just, they're drawing upon all these little points that I've been bringing up. Proper conduct, divine technique, it's all very precise, because again, we have this absolute law that we're immersed in on the aisle that we have to absolutely conform to. So it's all very precise here. And you notice how they're even struggling to try to come up with ways of expressing it. So the word harmony, you know, like when we think about threefold actuality with the triunity, or the kind of unity is a triunity, you know, and down there in that block is harmony, you know, and we, harmony is the keynote of the central universe, or in the Celestial Artisan paper, they say harmony is the speech of Havona, right? Same thing. So, you know, they're saying you can kind of appreciate, taking your initial sense of what harmony means and lifting it all the way up there to Havona. But to go beyond that, to go to the aisle, I said, well, you know, it's really not, the word harmony just doesn't, because it's now not this, immediately experiential phenomenon that has been harmonized or that expresses a harmony because it's been, you know, because it was made that way, you know, these experiential beings were made that way, that they're in harmony. It's beyond that. There's an order, and it's detectable. A detectable order prevails on paradise. Something that's harmony-like, is you can say order they're thinking, and you can detect it just like you can hear harmony in a song. It's discernible, but it's something that goes beyond anything that is appropriate to sort of corrupt with the word harmony, and even with more distortion of meaning. So that's what they're getting at there, is something that they can't even really figure out how to just put into words, that existential sequence, like we've said, that's just there, always has been, always will be on the aisle, you know. The fact that it's an existential sequence, not an experiential sequence, not some incredible harmony of experiential sequence. See, it's beyond that. That's what they're getting at there. And then of course they're bringing in the three primary supernovae that are coming up next. So you have that proper conduct is essential to progress. So again, you got to do this in law, by way of knowledge, as custodians of knowledge are next, you know, and then through philosophy, the masters of philosophy, to the spiritual heights of spontaneous worship, you know, conductors of worship. Okay, now, spontaneous. You remember, Gene? What does the word spontaneous literally mean, etymologically? It's the way the revelators use it all the time. It means of free will. Yeah, that's what it. And when the revelators use the word spontaneous, that's they're using it in that direct sense. It's of free will. Everything that's going on the aisle is of free will. You know, so it's just kind of appreciate this. I mean, right now, remember when they talk about your inner life and how, you know, that's really kind of the only domain right now where you're freed from, you know, the fetters of antecedent causation. And, you know, you have this measure of liberty, of free will. See, we're talking about having it everywhere now, not just figuratively between my ears, my inner life. The way that you engage the whole outer life and everything is fully in this mode now. Everything is of free will, everything that happens, because it's an existential place. It's an existential sequence between two things. To get from where the sender is here with the directors of conduct to the conductors of worship, you have to know how to go through a certain existential sequence that just is and always has been. And so that's what they're alluding to there. It's all very, this technique. And one of the fun things there, they do occasionally where they use capital D divinity. We've talked about that a couple times when they do that. You know, you have capital D deity, you know, very much that top-down deity fact. And occasionally when they don't want you to bring in the literalness of deity, but just the quality of that deity, but they want to remind you, we're talking about the capital D deity, the very top-down thing. They use that capital D divinity. Okay. It's the other way around with the lowercase. Most of the time you have a lowercase d divinity, and every once in a while they'll throw in a lowercase d deity, like we pointed out. See, and again, that's the bottom up as opposed to the top down. You know, when they're, they'll occasionally use that lowercase d deity when you're really thinking of the upwelling, like when you're thinking about the Almighty, that facet of deity. You know, and it's upwelling out of the reservoir, sort of the absolutes through the supreme creator personalities. Occasionally they'll use that lowercase d deity, which is kind of in line with the lowercase d divinity that, we're striving for and that we're practically at, in a full finite sense here on the Isle of Paradise. So you have the lowercase d divinity trying to match up with the uppercase D divinity. And then just that, why do the final, you can get the spirit of it, as they say in Havona, but the final touches have to wait till you get here. Again, it's just simply because Havona is an amazing place, but the environment that you're in there is not this existential place. There's no way to acquire this except in that place. You can't, even simulate it anywhere else. No matter how fancy things might be in the first circle of Havona, nothing is, is a substitute for the existentialness of the aisle. So they've got to get you to do the final touches there.
All paradise conduct is wholly spontaneous, in every sense natural and free. But there still is a proper and perfect way of doing things on the Eternal Isle, and the directors of conduct are ever by the side of the strangers within the gates to instruct them and so guide their steps as to put them at perfect ease and at the same time to enable the pilgrims to avoid that confusion and uncertainty which would otherwise be inevitable. Only by such an arrangement could endless confusion be avoided. And confusion never appears on paradise.
So, it's a very theoretical thing. See, that they're speaking. It's kind of like saying, a creator son could choose iniquity. Theoretically, you could have absolute chaos on paradise, but never going to actually happen. Again, why is it theoretical? Because you are literally, like I'm saying, unleashing the fullness of your absolute free will. And if that was done out here, if you could unleash the absolute of your free will out here, you would have pandemonium. Endless confusion. Endless because it's absolute. Okay, so you would just crush everything. It would just be a complete chaos. But there you can unleash it and you don't get that because there's absolute law. And and the revelers just love to do this. Okay, so here you are, you know, you weren't born a paradise citizen. You aren't a native of the Isle of Paradise. So, you know, you're a stranger in a strange land. But, you know, quote unquote, strangers within the gates. Does anyone know where that's from in the Bible? Okay, that's in one of the commandments of the Ten Commandments. Okay, yeah. Are we talking about law here? Yes, we are. And they just couldn't resist. It's like, law, what do they think of when you say law? Well, everyone thinks of Ten Commandments. They even stick that on the Supreme Court, you know, edifice. And this, okay. Yeah, so they use that expression out of the Bible. You know, it's in both in Exodus and in Deuteronomy. And you got the list of the Ten Commandments. It's when they're talking about the Sabbath day, you know, that commandment about remembering the Sabbath day and keeping it holy, that applies even to the strangers within the gates. So even outsiders, goes beyond the Jews, have to follow that one, follow that commandment to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. You know, and when you think about that, that the sacredness of that day, that the placeness of that day. See, that even ties into where we are on the aisle. It's a great little thing for them to bring in. If you hadn't picked up already, because you notice they haven't said law or absolute law anywhere. I'm inserting that. See? Yeah, so that's what they're trying to do there, to get you to think about that. That's what's fundamentally why all this, all these techniques and conducts and proprieties and musts, this and that, and, you know, that's why it's all there. It's because of the law. And everyone, even the strangers, have to conform to that law, just like one commandment. All right, so, you know, it's... And that confusion never appears on paradise. I mean, because it's absolute law, so it's not going to be disrupted. But, you know, what if you can't bring yourself into relationship with that absolute law? Well, that's happened three times prior to you getting to being a resident of paradise. Remember, we talked about that when you had to go there to try to, you know, comprehend the three persons, you know, that initial personal comprehension of the three persons. But, you know, you had almost no experiences on the aisle because you couldn't remotely bring yourself into a relationship with this absolute law that just is there. You know, and coincidentally, because you couldn't, you didn't cause any confusion on the aisle. So, before, you didn't cause confusion because you just had no ability to stick your fingers into it where, you know, it's even possible. Now you can actually stick your fingers into it, but you're not going to cause confusion because just as much as you have absolute liberty for the first time, you know, your fingers are in perfect absolute law configuration. They're perfectly proper. And, you know, so the absolute, you know, the absence of confusion remains. It's just now you can experience that absence of confusion, whereas before, you know, you couldn't experience anything, by and large.
These directors of conduct really serve as glorified teachers and guides. They are chiefly concerned with instructing the new mortal residents regarding the almost endless array of new situations and unfamiliar usages. Notwithstanding all the long preparation therefore and the long journey thereto, paradise is still inexpressibly strange and unexpectedly new to those who finally attain residential status.
See, so they had strangers and there's the strange lands, eh? it's just inexpressibly strange and unexpectedly new, again, fundamentally because it's this existential place. And it's just, there isn't even anything on the first circuit of Avona that even remotely prepares you for what it's like there. It is just completely different than anything you can remotely imagine when you're standing on the pilot world of the first circle of Avona, ready to be transported over there. It's still an infinite distance away in your comprehension. It should be kind of exciting to think about how, you could still have such amazing discoveries awaiting you even when you're standing there in the pilot world, ready to go to sleep for the last time. Is it not the case when we were talking about interpreters that it is that sequence, discover, recognize, interpret, and choose? Yeah, I mean, there's always some new avenue of discovery, that'll be open. And there's recognition that needs to follow that, and interpretation that needs to follow that, and choice that needs to follow that. all right. But again, you saw the... didn't really give us much in the way of details about, exactly what does a usage look like? There's nothing they can really tell us there. if they can't even tell people on the first circle of Avona, they obviously can't tell us either what these usages are all about. Okay, so now what they were foreshadowing there, should at least have time to get through the custodians of knowledge, and maybe we can get to the Masters of Philosophy, we'll see here. You'll see as we get into this, we're about to take the words knowledge and philosophy, and worship too, when we get there, up to a very transcendent level. It's not just more of the same. It's not just a quantitative transcendence that I'm speaking of. It's a fundamental quality transcendence here that they're going to interject. So giving you that up front, try to let go of your preconceptions of the word knowledge right away as we start reading this.
Section 5, the custodians of knowledge. The superaffic custodians of knowledge are the higher living epistles, known and read by all who dwell on paradise. They are the divine records of truth, the living books of real knowledge. You have heard about records in the Book of Life. The custodians of knowledge are just such living books, records of perfection, imprinted upon the eternal tablets of divine life and supreme surety. They are in reality living automatic libraries. The facts of the universes are inherent in these primary supernifum, actually recorded in these angels. And it is also inherently impossible for an untruth to gain lodgment in the minds of these perfect and replete repositories of the truths of eternity and the intelligence of time.
Okay. Now, first of all, it starts out with some fun use of, Bible phrases again. Like I said, they love to find ways that they can use some of these classic things from the Bible. The superaffic custodians of knowledge are the higher living epistles. Okay, as you might guess from the very fact that the word epistle is in there, that's in one of the epistles, that's in one of the letters, one of Paul's letters. It's in 2 Corinthians that they use that expression. Now, and it's basically in the sense, like you have from Jeremiah, of the law written on your heart. Taking it up a notch from Jeremiah when it's in that New Testament context of sort of the new covenant, written on your heart. But nonetheless, we've been talking about law. So right there, that law written on your heart, between the lines of that. And, that's just that idea that what we think of normally as being an outer life facts, knowledge about facts, is in their inner life. It literally is part of the inner life of these angels. Seems to be a further evidence of there's a blurring here, like I don't experience right now. It's like, well, where is the divide between the inner life and the outer life? If that whole bit about like when we say science, you know, which literally means knowledge in Latin, okay, when you say science, that in having a genuine science, a genuine relationship with facts in the outer life, see, that definition just doesn't really work now. So now this is in the inner life. They have a genuine relationship with facts in the inner life, and that's knowledge. Oh, well, this is like not quite the definition of the word knowledge that I'm used to, is it? Yeah, see, I've taken the word knowledge up to a higher level here than anything we can currently experience. Okay, bringing in that other reference, you know, that is essentially, you know, one of the oft-used phrases in the Book of Revelation, that Book of Life idea. You know, are you in the Book of Life or not? That's how they use that. Is it a thumbs up or thumbs down for you? You know, and so, well, you know, what's the basic idea there? You know, if your name is written in the Book of Life, if it's thumbs up, that means you're part of eternity. That Book of Life is a record of who's there in eternity. And it's being checked. Are you there or not? So when they invoke that here, besides, you know, having the word book, you know, and it kind of playing into the living epistles and stuff, we're on the aisle. We're in a domain that is timeless. The absolute of time is eternity. You know, we're in an eternity domain. See? They are there in eternity, like that Book of Life, you know, that metaphor is in eternity. Okay? And that, so what we're seeing, what you're beginning to see is, oh, well, what happens to the definition of the word knowledge when I go from time to eternity? When I go from time to the absolute of time? Okay? That's what's in play here. And we already are seeing that this blurring, that part of the distinction between an inner life and an outer life, see, must have to do with time. And if you transcend time, apparently this distinction starts to break down. Okay? All right. So what else do we have here? Okay, so you know, they're just such living books, records of perfection, you know, imprinted upon the eternal tablets. See, you know, that eternity. Now, you remember, let's see, when we started out this paper, they pointed out that these primary supernatum, remember, we talked about that quite extensively, that they told you that they have a certain type of a self that is personalized. That is a very high self. It's a self that is innately supreme in perfection, they said. Remember that? Okay, they're invoking that here again. See, the eternal tablets of divine life and supreme surety. And then they say they are in reality living automatic libraries. Remember how I was saying that, you know, set the personality of one of these primary supernatum aside for a second in the thought experiment, and what do you have? You have this supremely perfect machine that, for instance, can be a living epistle, you know, We imagine some vast, perfect machine being this library. Okay? See, their mindful self, you know, is essentially automatic. Okay? You know, it's like a machine. You know, auto self, the matic is, I mean, it's a, you know, it's self-minded. It's, you know, it's machine-like. Okay? But it's living and it's real. Okay, there's a personality identified with that. But see, this is just, you know, harking back to that. They're just reinforcing what I was saying, that that's very much the case. You know, it's like taking one of these master physical controllers that, if, you know, they say if we observed them, then the only thing that we could imagine is that it's some incredible machine. Except upon closer inspection, we'd be kind of befuddled because we'd notice it appears to be living and minded, but oh, so machine-like. Yeah, you have that same thing here, only this actually is a personality, a first source personality to boot. Yeah. So it's because they're these supreme machines that they're going to do, you know, they can do this kind of incredible manifestation of mentality, you know, like this. Okay. All right. The facts of the universe are inherent in these primary supernovae, actually recorded in these angels. Let's see. Okay, and then that last little bit. They're the repositories of the truth of eternity and the intelligence of time. Just remember that, and let's read the next one here.
These custodians conduct informal courses of instruction for the residents of the Eternal Isle, but their chief function is that of reference and verification. Any sojourner on Paradise may at will have by his side the living repository of the particular fact or truth he may wish to know. At the northern extremity of the isle, there are available the living finders of knowledge, who will designate the director of the group holding the information sought. And forthwith will appear the brilliant beings who are the very thing you wish to know. No longer must you seek enlightenment from engrossed pages. You now commune with living intelligence face to face. Supreme knowledge you thus obtain from the living beings who are its final custodians.
Okay, well, again, you know, the supreme machine, supreme knowledge, same. Okay, engrossed pages. Like this thing in my lap, for instance. Very engrossed. And I have to try to aggressively take the light in cultivating enough objective consciousness to try to draw enlightenment out of these engrossed pages. You know, and what are these engrossed pages? It tells me it's a revelation of truth. Truth is a knowingness, but it's not a knowingness to be that can be given. It's not knowledge. So, you know, I've been given this book. It's in my lap. There's words on it. So the truth is not immediately there. Knowledge is there. But I, like I was saying, I have to seek. You know, I have to be a true seeker. I have to seek enlightenment. I have to try to find the truth that isn't immediately apparent. You know, that somehow is flowing invisibly through the knowledge that's in my lap, the words that are in my lap. But wait a minute. Then I look back up here and I say, hold on. Any sojourner on Paradise may at will have by his side the living repository of the particular fact or truth he may wish to know. Oh dear. Wait a minute. This definition of knowledge. Truth is a knowingness. You know, I can know truth. But we say this over and over, but it's not knowledge. I can't give you truth. You have to discover it in your inner life. It's in my inner life. I can't pull it out of my inner life, put it in the outer life, cross the bridge and get it into your inner life. Like, it's not a knowingness that can be given. It's a null. It's not a knowledge. You know, remember the ledge part means given. It can be given. But look what they just said I can do here. They can give me truth. Truth is now knowledge. Truth is a knowingness that can be given to me there. Oh, well, that makes it definitive. There's no divide anymore between the inner life and the outer life.
Your in is out.
The whole domain is an inner life, basically, the way we'd understand it now. The whole domain is of free will, a wholly spontaneous domain. I am literally in a place where truth can be given, because it doesn't have to go from an inner life to an outer life back into another inner life. We're all in the same inner life. We're in an inner life called paradise.
A thought I had earlier about when they were talking about the rights that individuals have in paradise. It's like, to be on paradise, you have to belong there. You can't be there if you don't belong there.
Yeah.
So it gives you a place. And if you have a place and another being is there and they have their place, there's a correlation between their right and their place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a right to be there. They have a place there.
Yeah, and see, to think about this, you know, how that amps it up. That right thing, when it's all one inner life, you know, and how much we think, I have a right to my inner life. I have absolute free will. I know I do, and no one can take that away from me. That's the only unassailable righteous domain available to me. My outer life can be totally, you know, shackled. Now you're in a place where everyone is in one inner life. So no wonder everyone has rights.
Yeah.
Of course that person has rights. They're in their inner life. But coincidentally, so are you.
So your conduct has to account for it.
Right. You're in that existential place where all those who are in the Book of Life are. And it's, you know, think about how you have a little sense of what you did when you unpacked the concept of the I am and made reality. Another way to think about that I am is a theoretical God the Infinite, not the actual one, but a theoretical God the Infinite, where all there is just that one being. It's all one inner life, God the Infinite's inner life. What, you know, if I start unpacking the I am, what became of that theoretical inner life? It's still there. It is this paradiseness. You know, and when we think about right now the contrast between our inner life and our outer life, there is that distinction that could be described as existential compared to experiential. My inner life is where I am. Okay. The outer life, you know, that's what I understand where experiences come from. Beingness is just there in my inner life. You see, it all matches. You're in this domain, this existential domain. You're in this one inner life that would have been the only thing if there hadn't been a whole sequence that began with the Universal Father of cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. But see, that's basically, that's where you are. You are in that potential for the one inner life of God the Infinite. And everyone is there. Yeah. Everyone that's real is there.
Inner lives.
Right? So you're in a place where all are. Yeah. And so you have this, that's what I was saying, once you're there, you will really have your eyes set on the literalness of the infinite all are. Capital A-L-L, capital A-R-E, that opposite concept of the I am, the infinite I am. You see, you'll have the foretaste of that. Let's see. Where are we? Oh, yeah. Back to that point, though. See, literally here you can, truth is now knowledge. You're in a place where truth is knowledge. It's a knowingness that can be given to you. And that, like I said, notice at the end of that previous paragraph, the truth of eternity. Okay, and the intelligence of time. They're trying to help you to begin to understand this very initially inscrutable question. What is the difference between fact and truth? How do I get separated from the quandary that mankind has always been in, that Pontius Pilate expressed for all to remember, quid est veritas? What is truth? Everyone has been trying to figure this out, and no one has been able to figure it out. It's only with the fifth epochal revelation that we can begin to tease this apart. I mean, there are facts and intelligence about them, in time, the intelligence of time. But out here in time, there is another thing that's different than those facts, something that's called truth. And fundamentally, what is it? It's a knowingness that can be given if you're in eternity. Okay, so it's fundamentally, you see, the truth of eternity. So there's an aspect of what's in eternity that gets manifest out here. It isn't manifested as a fact, literally. It's a different thing called truth. It's going to be fundamentally holistic in quality, but it's tied to facts because it's a knowingness that can be given in eternity. So it's this fact-like thing that you can pass back and forth in eternity. So if that gets expressed out in time, it's going to have a relationship to the fact points. It's like, well, how could I visualize? How could it be, related to those fact points, but kind of everywhere? Well, what if I make it a flow in my picture? What if it's a flow that goes through all the facts out here? It's a fact that can't be nucleated out here because its linkage to eternity just can't be broken enough. See? Like the literal fact points out here. It's something that the absolute of individuality, the aisle, can't individuate. The aisle and that block about individuality, and that's where fact is. It's the factizer, it's the individuality, absolute individuality. Well, it doesn't seem to be able to grab a hold of this thing and turn it into a fact. It's something that transcends the aisle in some way, see? And its nucleating ability. to make facts out here. That's what truth is. So no wonder we struggle to try to figure out what it is. I mean, in a sense, what it is directly is transabsolute. I mean, it's something that just will not be nucleated, you know, and pointed to in a simple way and described and made knowledge that I can give to Katie or to Henri. Or, I mean, it's just, it refuses to be like that. Something that is nucleated and hence out in the outer life. It's something that is beyond those seven absolutes that, you know, that anchor this outer domain. It's something that's fundamentally more inner life. And of course here, you know, your outer life is your inner life on the Isle of Paradise, see? It's something fundamentally more deity-like than reality-like. See, so again, you're going to appreciate. That's why it's been so inscrutable. I mean, it's not till the fifth epical revelation that we've ever had the challenge put in front of us to try to separate the words God and deity. Yeah. So if you can separate God and deity, it's going to go a long ways to helping you separate fact and truth. You know, so again, you start to see this is a revelation of truth. This fifth epical revelation. That's what revelations are. Revelations of truth. That's what they're revealing, truth, not fact. And so no wonder the first section is deity, not God. In order to take truth up to this level, you can't just sort of intimate it anymore. You've got to differentiate God and deity right up front, first thing, or you're just not going to be able to engage truth at this level. Because, I mean, you could have the first four epical revelations of truth without that distinction between God and deity, because all you're trying to do is just get those first inklings of spiritual truth. Very inner life. You know, this is not just about the inner life. This book is about everything. So you've got to begin to identify with a paradise-like domain where truth is no longer confined to just have the adjective spiritual in front of it and be confined to your inner life. You want to be able to get truth out in the outer life too. That's the fifth epical revelation. Okay, so this is actually, you see, a very profound section for what's going on here with the fifth epical revelation. All right, let's see. But that's, you know, that should, you know, that's the kind of thing, you know, when they just say, you know, you can look up any, you know, get any fact or truth. If you haven't really had it drilled in your head yet, you know, from other spots in the book that truth is not knowledge, and then you go, well, wait a minute. All right, see? You know, until you notice a detail like that, you can't notice this conflict with that detail, and you're not going to be able to make progress. So now you understand, oh, that's a qualified statement. There's a lot of them like that in the book. I mean, but they didn't say, well, you know, unless you're in eternity, truth is not knowledge. I mean, they just give you the, you know, you're in time and that's all you can really understand anyway, So, you know, it's only in places like this, you know, the things that you learn when you're on the aisle that you begin to see the asterisk next to some of those sentences in the book that you maybe were going to absolutize before. It's like, be careful. It might be a relative statement. You need to, and if you take it out of context, you're going to go astray.
You wouldn't have the term ultimately if it didn't have the potential of meaning for us.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the sense of the word ultimately just from facts.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the facts, they don't tell you what ultimately will happen. But if you have a sense of truth,
yes,
then the term ultimately has meaning.
Yeah. Yeah. See, notice that? See, and you start, oh, that's why that word is in the dictionary. Maybe it isn't totally quidus veritas. right. Very, very, very astute. See, there's all kinds of little subtle things like that that we haven't recognized that are, you know, just sort of sitting there in front of us waiting for us to finally put the pieces together. All right.
What do you make of that?
Yeah.
Northern extremities.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I guess we won't have time to get to the Masters of Philosophy.
That's the only thing that's going on up north.
We have the southern extremity coming up, too. So, we'll talk about that next time.
These custodians, did I read that
over? Let's see, now we are...
When you locate the Supernifum, who is exactly what you desire to verify, you will find available all the known facts of all universes. For these custodians of knowledge are the final and living summaries of the vast network of the recording angels, ranging from the seraphim and seconophim of the local and super universes to the chief recorders of the tertiary supernifim in Havona. And this living accumulation of knowledge is distinct from the formal records of paradise, the cumulative summary of universal history.
Yeah, see, so finally we get, remember they were alluding to this back when we were, you know, remember if you flip back to the messenger host, let's see what page is that on, back there in sections 5 and 6 of paper 25, on page 281, you know, you had the custodians of records on paradise and then the celestial recorders, remember those? And we were talking about that. So, you know, here we finally have these custodians of knowledge to pair up. And notice how they threw in a little kind of twist there about those formal records. See, the formal records of paradise, the cumulative summary of universal history. See, so that's kind of the big distinction there. You have this fully personal living knowledge, you know, both fact and truth now kind of together in this higher living knowledge. That's one thing. But the universal history is just a formal record. Okay. So yeah, if you just reflect on that, that's when we there's kind of a number of interesting things that invokes. It's like, well, what about you know, and I go to you know, some national park or something, and they have a living history exhibit or something like that. You know, it's, you know, you really aren't seeing history. You know, you just notice that expression. See, like, you know, you're having someone play out kind of this more living knowledge of that, you know, related to that. But history is, you know, literally is history. It's not still alive. You know, there's actually subtle things. But then the killer is that italicized word in there, you know. You see this picture, it's like you have some innocent little question. I'd like to know about this one little thing. Okay, no problems. And they bring over the primary supernifim. And you are given all the known facts of all universes. It's like, whoa, too much information. I just wanted to know.
There's no such thing.
There is no such thing as just this one little island universe fact that you're wanting. Oh. you know, the thing to reflect on there, you know, is at this level, you are, you know, you won't go, wait, no, that's too much information, I didn't want that. I mean, that will be exactly what you want, because that's the only way you really have begun to understand things, is in that holistic consciousness. You know, before you interpret, you recognize. And you recognize, you know, in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, you fundamentally have this very high reflective thinking. Is really the only thinking you do. Nothing else even is remotely satisfying to you. If they try to just give you the little nugget. So really that thought experiment was invalid. You wouldn't have asked that question like we think you might ask, see? You would have asked for, I want the whole of such and so. And they give you the whole of such and so. You've ceased to be intrigued by parts. And the fact that you can use your second adjutant to do dot to dots between parts. Okay? You know, you're just not a fact finder anymore that loves to play dot to dot. And, you know, you're in that truth of eternity. Oh, yeah.
Can you even get into Havana that way?
Right.
Get into right. Service?
Yeah. So just that too. See, is a point of reflection about, you know, to be a true seeker. See, is to be one who wants to rise above, who wants to try to strike step with eternity. And the whole, who wants to stand above and look down and see the big picture, and discern the flow that's in the whole. It's so different than what people think, you know, it means to, you know, when you label yourself a truth seeker. All right.
The wisdom of truth takes origin in the divinity of the central universe. But knowledge, experiential knowledge, largely has its beginnings in the domains of time and space. Therefore, the necessity for the maintenance of the far-flung superuniverse organizations of the recording seraphim and supernaphim, sponsored by the celestial recorders.
See, there's the other one. Like I said, in these two paragraphs, they bring up those. Yeah, those custodians of records and the celestial recorders back there. Finally put them in the full picture here. Yeah, look at that fun little bit of... here you're kind of using knowledge in more of the immediate sense that we appreciate, see, how they're doing that. But knowledge, you know, experiential knowledge, see. So not, you know, it's not, you know, they put experiential knowledge because it's like set aside what you're recognizing about kind of the existential knowledge that you're getting on the aisle, you know, but back to your more understandable experiential knowledge thing where it's the, you know, about the outer life and the facts. You have this whole vast outer life network that, you know, scoops all this up and funnels it up, you know, up to paradise. So there's that. And then look at that interesting expression there, you know. And we won't get to the masters of philosophy here, but see, they're beginning to transition, you know, in your reflection here with that, the wisdom of truth. So one of the tricky things about the word philosophy, the concept of philosophy, being a philosopher, a lover of wisdom, is exactly what does the word wisdom mean? It's a little fuzzy, actually. No wonder it's quite fuzzy if you try to pin it down. You know, it's like Jesus said, well, I find you mostly in the first two levels of meaning. The third level of meaning is the level of wisdom. So no wonder we're a bit fuzzy on it. We hardly have any direct consciousness of our seventh adjutant yet, and that's even, you know, just that spirit of wisdom, you know, or that philosophic impulse, you know, you could call the seventh adjutant. So here, you know, there are obviously, if you're going to be talking about the masters of philosophy here in paradise, just like we took knowledge up, we're going to take the word philosophy way up too, obviously. And they're kind of giving his first hints of that. See, so the wisdom of truth. Well, in order to just kind of grok truth as they were bringing it in, you know, where truth was knowledge now and all this, and, you know, the truth of eternity, and how we had to bring in the idea of the whole, you know, that it's, if it's going to engage all the parts in time, you know, from eternity, it engages it in a holistic fashion. I mean, that's kind of the sense. See, there's the wholeness, the understanding, the holistic understanding of truth, the wisdom of truth. I mean, where you see that even in, you know, the very beginnings of evolutionary philosophy, you know, with the ancient Greeks, is that sense that you're not just trying to think about some part or some subset of parts. You're somehow trying to think about the whole. It's in the whole that you have wisdom, this thing called wisdom. And you don't have to define it really too definitively. Let it be a little vague. Let you just know that you're trying to somehow, you know, comprehend. Literally wrap your mind all the way around the whole. You're trying to encompass. You're trying to use that personality. See, in the personality block here in the chart, you know, that's where the spirit of wisdom is. Okay? And the spirit of wisdom engages the six adjutants that have already engaged a creature. And it tries to do what? It tries to encompass them. It tries to, you know, bring some measure of harmony into that system of adjutants. See, it's holistic. You know, and that's why Jesus calls that third level of meaning the level of mind. It's only when you actually have that kind of holistic quality that personality can engage, because it's an encompassing, fundamentally holistic fact. If it's the fourth block is the personality block, you can see that's all in the eyes of the universe. That's when you actually are minded, when you have that holistic quality. So again, we know that we were taking this way up to where this is very personal now, what we're doing with unity and associativity and individuality here once we got to the central universe. So see, that should tell you how you could have a more transcendent wisdom. So there's the truth, but then there's that kind of, you know, at least you can kind of abstract from the universal truth, universalness of truth, the holistic, the wholeness of it, the wisdom of it. Okay? All right, the last little bit there.
These primary supernifum, who are inherently in possession of universe knowledge, are also responsible for its organization and classification. In constituting themselves the living reference library of the universe of universes, they have classified knowledge into seven grand orders, each having about 1 million subdivisions. The facility with which the residents of Paradise can consult this vast store of knowledge is solely due to the voluntary and wise efforts of the custodians of knowledge. The custodians are also the exalted teachers of the central universe, freely giving out their living treasures to all beings on any of the Havona circuits, and they are extensively, though indirectly, utilized by the courts of the Ancients of Days. But this living library, which is available to the central and super universes, is not accessible to the local creations. Only by indirection and reflectivity are the benefits of paradise knowledge secured in the local universes.
Okay. You know, just that qualification. So it's freely given, giving out their living treasures to all beings on any of the Avonis circuits. Okay, well, first of all, obviously, there's going to be some qualification from what we were just reading about. They're not going to be able to do that as freely in Havona as they can, you know, in paradise on the isle. But it obviously is still going to be quite rich there. You can see, and they are extensively, though indirectly, utilized by the courts of the Ancients of Days. So it can be reflected out. The Ancients of Days need access, you know, to it. So the essentialness of what can be gotten indirectly through reflectivity can be put out there. Because remember, not even reflectivity can do what only personality can do. You know, that's why you needed solitary messengers, you know, for instance. Remember, we talked about that. So, see, that's the, you've lost that. So you've dropped it down another notch from paradise down to Havona and out of that. And it's obviously going to be getting to be a little bit more of the knowledge sense that we commonly think than this really high definition of knowledge that we had on the aisle there. But this living library, which is available to the central and super universe, is not accessible to the local creations. Only by indirection and reflectivity are the benefits of paradise knowledge secured in the local universes. So, why? Basically, when they say that, if I were to ask you that question, why would you have a thought? What would you?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's a short circuit.
Yeah, exactly. Of course it is. Yeah. It's one thing to put it out to the Ancients of Days in some significant form. They're God, and and their Trinity origin, to boot. Okay, you're going to short circuit to put anything very significant out into the local universes. Fundamentally, what's in play there, what you're short circuiting is, remember when you read about the evolution of light and life, embracing worlds, finally embracing a local system, a constellation, and then finally a local universe. That very slow process of evolving, through evolution, maybe I should say, through evolution, a local universe ascending upward until it finally gets up to the level of the super universe that it's in, and is really taken out of quarantine in a sense, actually plugged in and made part of the whole super universe. That's a very fundamental part of the evolutionary process, of the evolution of the Supreme. You can't short circuit that. That statement, you should feel a little tinge there, because your idealism doesn't like evolution and being cut off. So this is the flip side. This is the reciprocal side of the Father's way that we were just reading about, that's on the aisle in that existential domain, that where the Father's way is wholly spontaneous. It's just wholly of free will domain. You reciprocate that out into the evolutionary domains. And the Father's way is evolution. Okay. And your challenge, because your inner life is so like, is such a foretaste of that feast to come of the Isle of Paradise, that existential fiat domain, that's of free will domain, spontaneous domain. Your challenge is to not expect your inner life to be the outer life. And that's the fundamental tension that's led to the emergency that made this engrossed thing in my lap, the fifth epical revelation. The fact that people now have enough of an inner life, because, for no other reason, because Michael uplifted inner lives, the spiritual uplifter. So we now have these significant inner lives with all of these tension-producing thoughts, you know, and this now clear recognition that the outer life doesn't look like paradise. But your inner life wants it to look like paradise. So like I've said so many times, when you look out with that idealistic inner life and you don't see an idealistic outer life, you think that's a problem, you know, that needs to be fixed by your fiat consciousness in your inner life. We need to change things and make them perfect. No, that's rebellion. That's not the Father's way. The problem is not the imperfections in the outer life. The problem is the people who think that the imperfections in the outer life are a problem that need to be fixed by fiat. That's the problem. That's the emergency. The emergency has been produced by people trying to change the outer life spontaneously of free will. No. That outer life the Father's way out here is not like the Father's way out there. It's the outer life is an outer life out here. It's not an extended inner life. It's an outer life. And the Father's way in the outer life out here is evolution. Change without growth is potential evil. And that evil is being actualized as an emergency because there's all these idealistic people that want to make the outer life, the inner life. Okay? And you're on the verge of collapsing civilization because of it. Even more dangerous, of course, from an individual perspective, is that the moment that you think that thought, that's the ideas of a guy named the God of Liberty. Okay? You're unwittingly lining yourself right up, you know, with Lucifer and the rebellion when you think that what you should be doing is fixing those problems. They're not problems. Greed and corruption and tyranny and all those any other imperfections you can think of, gluttony or what, those are not problems. That's a process. Called evolution. You say, well, but nothing's happening. Ah, so you know not the truth. You have never noticed the flow, have you? You only see facts. Okay? If you could see the truth, if you could see that flow, that truth of eternity, you would see that there is a perfectingness out there. And not an imperfection. Now, what's out there is a something, not a nothing. Imperfection is a nothing. It can't be seen. The very fact that you think that you see imperfection is a testament to your sad to recordness. All those spiritually conscious people who think that they're enlightened are actually endarkened. They know not the truth. If they knew the truth, they could see the positive fact of the outer life that it's perfecting. You know, and they wouldn't be the unwitting agents of an emergency so great that the celestials got together and produced this thing in my lap. We would trust God. We would trust the Father's way. We would trust evolution. We would let it play out over time. We wouldn't try to make things perfect tomorrow. Okay? And we're probably not going to learn by looking at the revelation. We're probably going to have to learn by leaping. We're probably going to have to try to make things perfect through totalitarian means, like we're trying to do right now. And we're going to make everything 10 times worse than it was before we fixed it. And then in the morass that we spawn, it'll finally sink in. Oh, the God of liberty is a false God. The true God has a way, and it's called evolution, and I need to trust that. Stop trying to change God's way in the outer life. Make yourself right in here, you know, and then discern the subtle hand of the Supreme and the flow of truth, and do what you can as a little tiny you to help that process, to strike step with that process. But you don't have to be the process. The Supreme is the process. You just need to strike step with the process. You need to be in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, who bestows spirit and personality attributes in a being called the Supreme Being. That is that flow out there. Yeah. Put yourself in subordination to that. Trust that's the Father's way and it's right. Stop trying to change things.
When you allow evolution, you have to accept there's such a thing as success and failure.
Yeah.
You have to allow failure.
Yeah. You have to allow Permian extinctions, for instance.
In our idealistic thinking, when we see failure, we see
failure. I was like, that's bad. We should make it so no one ever fails again.
That's the knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah,
No, it's wrong if we witness failure. That means there's a problem with the
next thing you know, we're going to all have to be born equal.
Yeah. See, and it doesn't, you know, like I said, mostly it's unwitting. You aren't wittingly grabbing a hold of that which is bad. You think it's good to do that. No, that's bad. Change without growth is potential evil. It's the potential to grab a hold of that which is actually bad, thinking that it's good. Okay? It's not potential sin. I don't know what the sentence says. It says it's potential evil. And this is the problem. The problem on the planet is not the unenlightened. The problem is the enlightened, so-called. They're enlightened just enough to be a problem. They're enlightened just enough to be self-righteous. You can't participate in the Lucifer Rebellion until you're spiritual enough to be self-righteous. I mean, just primitive,
No danger.
Yeah, you can't join the Lucifer Rebellion. Why hasn't I've said this before. I mean, why hasn't the Lucifer Rebellion, come to an end here on this planet? Because we're just getting to the point where we can participate or not. So choose this day. Now that you can choose, now that Michael made it so that you have enough spiritual consciousness so you can choose between the rebellion or not, pick not. Now is the time to pick not. Instead of thinking that it should be your way. All right.
Now that last sentence.
Yep.
Indirection and reflectivity. So
mm-hmm.
They're addressing everyone down to the individual level with the local universe of indirection and reflectivity.
Right. So we obviously, we're not cut off from the super universe. They're not two domains like this. We all know the local universe is inside the super universe. So you can't help but benefit from what's coming into the super universe, as it should, indirectly and, reflectively. But it's through choice. It's not, It's the individuals down in the local universe choosing to reach up and get a hold of it indirectly, and through reflection. We have this thing, inner life thing we call reflection, reflective thinking. That's reaching up to reflectivity. It's kind of why they chose the same words there. It's reaching up into that relationship to the whole. And reflectivity is fundamentally this holistic manifestation. See, that's why they use the same words for it. I mean, they're this, they're these fundamental holistic expressions. So, yeah. But see, that's as it should be. Civilization is wholly a choice. Okay? And because there's this potential indirection in reflectivity, see, that's why civilization is possible. Okay, but it has to be chosen. It isn't just imposed. You know, it's imposed at the super universe level. It just is. Yeah. But we have to come rise up to it through discover, recognize, interpret, choose. That's the evolutionary process. All right. So next time we'll do the pair here, the masters of philosophy and the conductors of worship. Yeah, and then we've got just one more paper after that in this all these spirit origin beings we've been going through, the endless list, you know, which of course they tell us is a minuscule little nano drop of the beings of the third source and center. But you know, if you remember, this, the next paper is long. There's a lot of stuff about all this Aconophim. But then we'll finally be done with the spirit origin beings. We got the last three papers to wrap up this first part of the book. So let's take a moment here.